is National Hospice Month, and this is the Good Grief Podcast. We're going to talk about that, get things cleared up so we can get deeper into the topic with Amber Miller on the Good Grief Podcast, coming up right after this.
The holidays are a tough time for many reasons. The cleaning, organizing, and entertaining of your family and friends, or just simply the stress of buying that just right gift for your loved ones. But for many who are grieving, the emotional stressors that come with the holidays can feel intensified. All of us at O'Connell Family Funeral Home understand the pain the holidays can bring to those who have suffered a loss. Our event, Grief in the Holidays, is an amazing evening that provides hope, comfort, and meaning to those grieving this holiday season. It is also a resource to help you manage and cope during this difficult journey. Head to the website, O'ConnellFuneralHomes.com, to check out this year's guest presenters and to reserve your spot today. And now, back to our podcast.
We welcome you back to the Good Grief Podcast here from the O'Connell Family Funeral Homes. You can find them at O'ConnellFuneralHomes.com. Along with Amber Miller, once again, Pete Wagner. Amber, thanks a lot for joining us. And an interesting national month that I never really knew existed.
Yeah.
National Hospice Month. Mm-hmm. Why don't we get into all of that? And I think there's some concepts of what hospice is and what it's about. So, you know, this is a topic that you thought would be worthy of discussion. So why don't you give us the genesis behind this topic and this podcast?
Yeah. So from a funeral director perspective, you know, we meet with families often, and many of their loved ones have gone through the hospice process. And in chatting with them in order to kind of help them through their grief and learn a little bit more about their loved one, we really discuss the hospice process, how it was for them, you know, from a grief perspective, but also from how their loved one was cared for. And 99.9% of all families that I meet with, one of the first things that they say is, I wish we would have gotten my loved one on hospice sooner. And I had all of these fears or misconceptions about what it was. And once they were in place, I wish that they would have been around longer.
There's a, I believe, built-in mentality that hospice equals finality.
Right.
And it's over. So how often do you hear people, well, he went to hospice or she went to hospice? Like, it's just hours and days counting. And it's not necessarily the case. It could be years.
Right. Absolutely. Yep. It doesn't necessarily mean that this or your loved one is imminent, like days or hours to death, or it's just for the elderly. It can begin anytime a physician, you know, gives that prognosis of 6 months or less, if that disease is supposed to take its expected course. But oftentimes the additional care that a loved one gets on hospice allows them to actually do better because they're seeing nurses regularly. They're having aides. Their physician is coming more often. They're having a more quality life care with chaplains and social workers. There's just so much that goes into hospice that, you know, oftentimes people who are enrolled outlive their expected prognosis.
Well, it's not necessarily a means to the end.
Right.
You know, sometimes I think we think we're just skipping along. When you define hospice as what it is, obviously it's extended, more intense, kind of round the clock care.
Yeah.
And it depends upon what it is.
Right.
It used to have a label that, well, if you have cancer, you just, you know, you go to hospice and die.
Mm-hmm.
That's a myth, though. It's not just cancer.
It's not just for cancer. Right. It's for any diagnosis. So kidney failure, dementia, COPD, congestive heart failure, all of the things, you could potentially be eligible for hospice.
Do patients have a say in their care?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's another kind of hurdle for people to get over is, oh, I don't want to enroll them in hospice because I don't want them to think that they no longer have a say in what happens in their care. But that can't be further from the truth. Hospice care in its root stems from the patient and their wishes. So if they wish to stay in their own home, hospice will grant that. If they wish to be in a facility or have a chaplain visit them or a social worker, if they want to keep seeing their primary care physician, absolutely, they make it work. They can even allow them to keep on their medications that they want or remove them. So if there's some that are giving them side effects that they don't want, like maybe chemotherapy, for instance, for someone who has cancer, they can go off that if the patient wishes. If they choose to stay, that's their wish as well.
I'm big into branding and marketing. I think the hospice community needs to rebrand the name of their, yeah. because somewhere along the way, there became a finality to mm-hmm. it that I think really long term has put these myths into this like big bundle. And one of them is, and we mentioned it earlier, is that it's just a place you go to check out. Mm-hmm. And there's someone just sitting there waiting for you to die.
Right.
But people don't die faster. You mentioned that it extends, mm-hmm. actually. And it probably much to the surprise of family.
Right.
And even the person.
Right. Right. And I think there's also this connection or this bad connotation between hospice and the use of morphine as right. like a pain reliever. So you hear often that
they're on morphine.
They're on morphine. Oh. All of a sudden it yeah. killed them.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. Right.
But really in terms of any sort of pain relieving medication, they're starting very low. They're only increasing if they see that that pain is worsening or hearing from the patient, their pain is worsening. So this idea that hospice comes in and immediately sedates your loved one and it's done for them is really a misconception. And they never, you know, I hear that too. They never will deny you food or water or anything. Oftentimes when you're in the dying process, patients don't necessarily feel that hunger or thirst because their body is using resources in other areas.
Probably the last right? thing you're thinking about.
Right, right. But that's a huge thing for families. Like, oh, they haven't eaten in 3 days. We need to kind of force feed them. Or hospice is telling us no, and they're trying to, you know.
Finish them.
Right. And that's not the case.
You kind of do get a weird like vibe from people's perception that hospice workers are almost instruments to helping the people die. Mm-hmm. But they're not. But that's kind of the vibe you get. And like what I'm seeing here on these myths. Mm-hmm. And that's where the rebranding, they need to change the name. They got to like come back out right. with something mm-hmm. more like someone determined this word as being what it was. Then there's some eligibility things that are thought of that like basically it supports what we were just saying. It's a place you go to die. That some people were thinking that you had to sign a DNR, do not resuscitate, in order to be eligible. Right.
And that is false as well. And it goes back to kind of what the patient wants. If you don't want to sign a DNR or the patient doesn't, that doesn't mean that you're now disqualified or ineligible for hospice.
Does this come from a doctor referral or how do you get to there? Who decides? How does that work?
Yeah. So I think that's also a big misconception is that you need to be referred to hospice by your physician. And these conversations are tough. They're frank conversations that medical professionals have to have with their families and clients. And so naturally, it's a hard conversation to have. It's not had as often. So I think, especially from a hospice perspective, a lot of their physicians are really reaching out to doctors and communities and talking about the importance of having these discussions early. Because like I said in the beginning, so many people are saying, I wish I would have gotten my loved one in hospice sooner. I wish I would have known that this mm-hmm. was a possibility. So maybe you aren't getting a referral from your doctor, but be proactive and advocate for your loved one and say, is this an option? Is this someplace where we're at right now? And if they don't know, reaching out to local hospices in the area to kind of get a feel about what they offer and what they feel would be a good next step for you and your loved one.
Are they expensive?
Nope. For the most part, if you are on Medicare or any sort of private insurance, all of the hospice benefits you are eligible for free of charge.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. As long mm-hmm. as it fits. Are you, this kind of plays back to what we were saying, you know, like once you're there, can you return back to regular treatment?
Yeah. If you outlive your prognosis and things are getting better, or maybe you decide midway through hospice that you want to now start continuing with curative treatments, whether that's going back to chemo or something like that, you most certainly can be discharged from hospice at any point or if it's not a good fit for you and
is,
family.
Is it fair to say that some people that go in there end up like walking out and are living a normal life? Like, or is that not yeah. the case?
You know, usually because of that prognosis of 6 months or less,
it's pretty
you know,
much, yeah.
you know, it's pretty much that way. But there are plenty of people, you know, if you talk to a local hospice organization, they'd probably say, oh, yeah, we have 50 patients that have been on hospice for plenty of years. When they're still
I think that'd be
okay.
a huge thing for them from a marketing perspective, honestly.
Right, right. And all that time, they've been receiving amazing care from all the nurses correct. That see them often and all the other professionals.
And changing the myths.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. and changing the discussion.
Yeah.
How about comments you often hear from families who've used their loved ones? What do you hear?
Yeah. So again, that I wish I would have gotten them on right. hospice sooner. And the reasons why is that hospice provides that extra care that maybe is above and beyond what we as the caregivers can do. So it improves that quality of life. It lessens pain and side effects from the disease, but it also allows them to be the most comfortable in their environment. So if it's mm-hmm. at their home or their care center or assisted living or another facility as needed, which is really great because I think the hospital is a scary place to go. Mm-hmm. So being in a hospital or being in a place where we have all of our things by us and we're receiving the care is the best. And it's so well-rounded. Not only are you getting the medical side from the nurses and aides and physicians, but a lot of hospice organizations have massage therapists. They have chaplains for spiritual needs, social workers for emotional music therapists, companionship through volunteers. Even some hospices have pet therapy too. So bring dogs and cats in, dietary counseling. And I've even seen like aromatherapy. So using essential oils as part of the process.
How do you work with the hospices in conjunction with each other?
Yeah. So, you know, many times we're so close with the hospices and the nurses, we see them often that they will be in communication with us. So if the family chooses, you know, okay, my loved one is terminal here and there's maybe a couple of days left, they'll give us a call and let us know and say, hey, you know, here's a family that you're expecting, or they'll point to us, they'll point the family in our direction.
You get the heads up and the referral.
Right. Absolutely. Right. And, you know, just so that there's maybe some stairs are involved or anything like mm-hmm. that. And also they point families to us as a resource. So oftentimes in the final stages, families are wondering, well, what are next steps for a funeral and pre-planning or pre-funding? What does that look like? So they'll point us to that family and we can connect and answer any questions they may have.
How many hospice organizations are within this area, do you think, just roughly?
Maybe six.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Maybe six in and around kind of the cities and metro area and then, you know, Western Wisconsin.
That's
but I'm
a lot.
Sure there's more. Yeah. So not every hospice is the same. Each have their own particular things that they offer and benefits and such. But as a whole, again, if you're on Medicare or private insurance, all of that hospice benefit you're eligible for. So.
Well, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What drove your, I know we kind of talked about it earlier, but this is definitely an area of passion for you.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, before coming back to the funeral home, I actually worked at a hospice in the area in their bereavement department. So I was directly in kind of the line of hearing about how families loved hospice and really cared and got a really true connection with the staff members that were a part of hospice. And then transitioning to the funeral home, I continued to hear it. So I'm hearing it all the time about how great hospice is and how special they make process and really answer all the questions of the family and care for their patient like their own family. So I knew that this was very important to kind of dispel some myths so that people knew more and it wasn't so scary of a topic to discuss.
What a great month to do it, November being National Hospice Month.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't recall that you had done that, but it was obvious that there is a real energy and passion about it. And that was, it came out in all of this. So really good stuff, Amber.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You as well.
And everybody else listening to this podcast, for Amber Miller, I'm Pete Wagner. So long, everybody.